This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hello and welcome to Uprise Radio. My name is Koshin.
My name is Zen. I'd like to start by acknowledging that we are broadcasting on the unceded lands, the sovereign lands of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. And the song that is playing underneath us at the moment is from Hassan Abu Alam. It's titled Kesibit, featuring SHBLLBACH. And it's from a four-track EP titled Fasla, put out by Banoffee Pies Records. And for this installment of the show, we are going to be unpacking, running around in circles, screaming, and talking about the recent events in Iran, going through what has been happening through kind of a series of events, and also looking at a bit of analysis behind various motivations and justifications, and a little bit of a look forward towards what the future days and weeks might hold. So strap in with us.
It's going to be interesting. There's a lot to go through.
There always is. There's always a hope in my mind that for one episode we'll have a good news story, and every fortnight there's a new disaster that needs desperate talking about.
Yeah, really does feel like it's an endless spiral into oblivion. But we're going to, anyway, enough of that.
But we're doing it with friends and music, so it's going to be okay. So I thought we could start off by going through a series of events that kind of gets everyone, I suppose, as much up to scratch as we are on where things are happening, because there have been so many developments over the past few days and a lot of things to consider. And this series of events is probably by no means exhaustive, but it's as much as we know about the current situation. Feel free to jump in whenever.
I will.
So I think the place I'm going to start is the 28th of Feb, which I'm sure everyone knows about, with the attack launched in Iran, which was really tastelessly named Roaring Lion by Israel and Epic Fury by the US Department of Defense. And during this attack, there have now been, up to today, 555 people killed in Iran, 11 people have died in Israel. And these attacks were based at Iranian nuclear and military facilities. However, there were many casualties outside of this.
And civilian, I mean, we're at a weird point now where they can just openly say that they're targeting civilian centers, like just government bureaucrats. They're just targeting civilian headquarters and civilian targets and cultural targets.
While also saying it's a military target as well. Mm. And following that, there's been a lot of responses. There's been an Iranian missile retaliation. There's been a shutdown for a lot of key gas production facilities that has affected a lot of different areas, including places like Qatar also shutting down output. And a key threat, given one of the closures, has been the blocking of the Strait of Hormuz, which carries up to 20% of the global oil supply. There's also been Israeli strikes in Lebanon following Hezbollah rocket fire. There's been Iranian strikes in Qatar. There's been civilian injuries. And
all across the Gulf. I mean, I think they've hit every Gulf state at this point. Everyone with a US base has been hit. Yeah, it's really, it's the whole region is on fire now.
Yeah, and I think some of the visual descriptions have been helpful to actually see how a lot of the strikes have been along sites of the border as well with Iran.
Yeah. Yeah, the one of the targets that they've been hitting that they haven't been as open about is that they have been striking Iranian border facilities, which are primarily there because Iran is in a kind of constant simmering conflict with various groups on various areas of their border, and it seems like there is a plan. I mean, there is a plan that's now, I think, being reported that there is an outright plan by the US to essentially use these other groups to send them into Iran across borders that are going to be smashed and have them do the fighting on the ground for the US. Yeah, which is, I don't know, it's not taking responsibility for the actions that they've started. You know, there's no, they're not willing to actually follow through. They just, I think they really just want chaos at this point. I think they just want to destroy Iran and turn it into Libya or something resembling that. Yeah.
And I think at any point in which there has been a semblance of a line towards there is a plan, I feel like one person in particular is Donald Trump will just keep changing the plan, given that whatever reasoning he's given doesn't hold up under any form of domestic or international law. So then he'll just find another justification and plan and follow that.
Yeah, it's international law is just out the window. They're not even really pretending anymore. I mean, I guess they are when they gesture towards this like the nuclear threat. They kind of talk about this imminent threat that's preemptive in some way. But they're not even really trying. It's not in Iraq. They at least fabricated intelligence and pretended that there was this, you know, imminent threat that then later was discovered to be, you know, totally fabricated. But with this, they're not even supplying fake evidence. They're just saying, trust us, there was a big imminent threat and we had to do this. But also we were doing it for regime change, and also we were doing it for their ballistic missile program. It's just all over the place. Like, they just cannot stick to one line.
And even though they cannot stick to one line, hopefully we can go through and look a bit at one of the, I guess, some of the different justifications have been around this attack. I think the main ones, I mean, there's been many shifting ones, but the ones that I've seen most are around it being around Iran's nuclear program, Iran's ballistic missiles, claims of an Iranian strike being imminent, and a crackdown on protests. And I think maybe it could be good to start with the alleged nuclear program being reconstituted, because there's been a lot of, I guess, investigating into this after the fact. There's been a lot of different messaging coming mostly from the US. There's a lot of people, such as Donald Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, which he previously suggested Iran was a week away from industrial-grade bombing material. But then at the same time, another spokesperson for the White House, Caroline Leavitt, also said that the June 2025 strikes had already obliterated Iran's nuclear facilities. And the White House claimed that the destruction of facilities was verified by the International Atomic Energy Agency. However, the statement that the International Atomic Energy Agency actually gave out was that there was severe damage, not total destruction. But either way, there's just a huge gaping hole in that. If the program was fully destroyed, it can't simultaneously also be an imminent threat. So one of the statements needs to be false, but no one's going to say who.
Yeah. And also, I mean, the whole thing is about, you know, whether or not they were developing it into weapons, which the US will publicly say. I mean, these different groups that investigate these things will publicly say that there wasn't a weapons program. So, and, you know, the second part of the threat is the development of intercontinental ballistic missiles that could then strike the US. That's the self-defense justification. But again, the the US intelligence that they themselves are wheeling out is that if Iran wanted ICBMs, it would take them 10 years to develop them. So they're just publicly saying that there wasn't a threat, but then at the same time coming out and saying there absolutely was. They've been a week away from developing nuclear bombs for 20 years, according to Netanyahu. And this is just so obviously, you know, like a long-term strategic goal of Netanyahu since before he was even prime minister. And he finally got a pliant enough U.S. administration that was willing to actually go along with this, you know, like just even from their perspective, like a terrible idea. Like it's just no one wins. This is just going to be, you know, I think this really is probably the beginning of something that will have long-term consequences.
And it's also a really strange thing to consider given that within the context of nuclear deals and negotiations, so Trump withdraws from the nuclear deal in 2018, is imposing sanctions, but then there's also negotiations happening at the same time, and one key person, Ali Shamkhani, was involved in these negotiations and they were looking good. They definitely weren't going south. And those negotiations concluded a Friday ago. And then following that, that figure was killed. And it seems really bizarre, given the US was actively involved in negotiations that were going well, that this would be a response.
Yeah, which is the same thing they did in June last year. They were in the middle of negotiations. They led Iran on to believe that they were serious negotiations, that they really were trying to get back to something like the Iran deal that they ripped up years ago for no one's benefit. And then in the middle of those negotiations, as they're making progress, they just start bombing. When they were negotiating again this time, I mean, the idea was that, okay, last year it was just kind of this big show of force to make sure that if they negotiated again, it would be serious this time. But again, they just used the negotiation as a ruse, as like a cover for their own military goals. I mean, if they've been planning this attack for weeks and they've been negotiating for weeks, then what are you supposed to take away from that other than never negotiate with the United States? Don't try to, like, there's no diplomatic outcome. These are not serious people who want to, you know, make concessions and find a middle ground. This is just an empire that is based on dominance and destroying their enemies.
And really also flying in the face of not only international law, but its own domestic law. Mm. There's been talks around how, like, under the US Constitution, it's the Congress to declare war.
Yeah.
And if the Congress hasn't even been consulted.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure if anyone at the White House is even talking to each other.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've done that. They haven't been to war since World War II. Every war, when the Korea and Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan, every war that they've been involved in hasn't technically been a war. Like, they've been, you know, obviously they have been wars, but they've never labeled them as wars. And that's why Trump is kind of this strange figure in that maybe he doesn't understand the implication of him. He's using the word war. He is coming out and saying we are at war with Iran, which is, you know, like admitting that it's something else, that it's not a special military operation or like some kind of, you know, policing operation like it was in Korea. He's admitting that he's at war with Iran and just, yeah, flagrantly throwing out any of the kind of process or whatever that really, I mean, even if they did go through the process, as if they wouldn't all vote to go to war with Iran. Like, they're all supporting it. Like, it's not like it would have stopped this from happening.
As if anyone cares about due process anymore.
Yeah.
I feel like that's been really telling throughout this, is the way that not only has the US disregarded international law and domestic law with a new level of vigor, but also just so many different countries and continents have come out in support of this, even though people have previously been in support of international law.
Mm.
It's been wild to see how so many people are just backstepping.
Mm. And in their demands, saying that Iran needs to go back to the negotiating table, which is just like, I mean, I'm
which
sorry.
Which they were doing until members of the negotiation party started getting killed.
I'm sorry, but yeah, what do you want them to do? Like, the US was the one who broke the negotiations off by unilaterally deciding to attack. Or maybe Israel, I mean, they're both kind of, Israel and the US now are both kind of saying the other one started it. Although the US now is kind of flip-flopped on that. I think today Trump is saying the US started it. It's a weird hot potato of who actually was the instigator on this.
And it feels like Donald Trump also isn't sure if he wants to avoid accountability or if he wants credit for it, which I think keeps changing the messaging over whether he was the one that started it or whether it was through to kind of pressure or influence from Israel.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it all depends on how popular it is. If it's popular, he wants the credit. And if it turns out to be unpopular, he'll want to shift the blame to someone else. It's just been... It's just been already such a disaster, and it's only really starting.
Two other negative shout outs I want to give is one to Anthony Albanese for the spineless support of this, and also Mark Carney, who previously was really into talking about the end of rule-based order and the need for us to resist the great power hegemony that is the US. But now I'm not sure if Mark Carney talking about the end of rule-based order means that he also doesn't actually even want to follow international law anymore because he's been in support of this.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they're happy to make their speeches and, you know, assert themselves when the pressure's low. But as soon as push comes to shove, they all line up behind the US. Australia was, you know, raced to the podium to be one of the first to throw in and say, we support this, we're all for this. It's just, yeah, it's just ridiculous. Like the just never ending constant support for US aggression and then just trying to shift the blame. I mean, there's been a few journalists who have said, oh, is this legal internationally? And they all say, oh, that's up to the US and Israel. As if, when was that decided?
They're now the ICJ apparently and the ICC.
Since when does the person who's, you know, like alleged to have committed a crime, since when do they get to decide if they committed a crime? No, like you absolutely can from a third party perspective look in and say, yeah, that's illegal. You can't do that actually. You're not allowed to just go around doing whatever you want, blowing people up. And the reverberations are going to be massive. I mean, there's a religious element to this as well on both ends. The Ayatollah Khomeini was killed in the first wave of strikes, who is, it's kind of hard. There's no, we really don't have a comparison for like what kind of a figure that is in that world. I mean, he's not only the political, he's the supreme leader, but he also holds a, you know, revered religious, he's essentially like, it's equivalent to, imagine if someone bombed the Vatican and killed the Pope. I mean, that would be a big deal for Catholics around the world and everyone would be able to understand that clearly. But people are kind of having a hard time understanding that. You know, I understand that people have, you know, they disagree politically, et cetera, but it's irrelevant to the significance. I mean, you don't need to support him to understand the significance of killing him. And the fact that they just did this with no real plan on what comes next in the middle of Ramadan and have agitated, you know, millions of the Shia population specifically, and more specifically, the sect of the Shia, the 12er Shia group, which Hezbollah subscribes to. I mean, they are not just, I mean, outraged is a, doesn't sell it. I mean, these people are very animated now and very willing to fight. And unless this is some kind of a plan to actually create, you know, to actually inspire extremism, I don't know what the plan was here. I mean, this was not a good move if you're trying to bring peace to the region. This is, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's a huge incentive to forge alliances, even if there were none before, based on the need for resistance and solidarity.
Yeah, I just can't imagine that this isn't going to be, yeah, like a turning point for a lot of people, and it's going to, radicalize a lot of people in the region who might have otherwise not been radicalized. But, Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know, yeah. It could do a whole episode on explaining the significance of, you know, who Khomeini was. And now, I mean, there's reports coming out that they've elected a new Ayatollah, who's the previous Ayatollah's son. So, I mean, what did this get exactly? 4 days of Iran not having a head of state? Was the benefit from this? I mean, it's done nothing to actually, you know, progress anything.
And there is also absolutely no hint that this new leader won't also have the exact same capabilities and abilities to engage with a nuclear program as the previous one.
The idea that killing the Ayatollah Khomeini would have diminished their ability, it doesn't really, it's not even coherent. It doesn't even really add up. I don't know.
I do need to quickly do one actual positive shout out to Burkina Faso to labeling the United States as a terrorist state.
Yeah, big Burkina Faso episode coming. Just you wait.
It is right around the corner. We say that every fortnight.
Right around the corner. And we're going to figure out, we're going to get to the bottom of this Burkina Faso business.
I think one thing I also wanted to touch on was just the role of oil in this, because there is a lot of geopolitical power wound up in the way that kind of the market of oil is, and the way that so many countries, whether they be allied or enemies of each other, are also really deeply wedded into an economy with one another, because we all use oil, and a lot of different countries have different capacities over whether they are a primary producer or a refiner or an importer. And so with the Strait of Hormuz being blocked, there's been, I guess, potential for huge ramifications to be flowing, given how maybe Iran didn't previously have as much political power in regards to oil as, say, someone like the US does. But given this disruption, the flow-on effect to different countries is massive. And I think, especially also here in Australia, being mostly a prime importer.
I mean, Japan gets 80% of its oil, something like maybe even more than 80% of its oil through the Strait of Hormuz. So, I mean, a country like Japan is essentially completely reliant on that flow. Something like this is going to have huge consequences, and they're trying to act strong and pretend that it's no big deal, but I mean, it is a big deal. Like, the insurance companies are no longer insuring the oil tankers to sail through there. The US is trying to set up some kind of state-backed insurance for the oil tankers, but it's just, this is going to be a big deal. It's going to have consequences.
China has also attempted a little bit of peacekeeping through that state, mostly because China is a primary refiner. So while it doesn't have a lot of oil itself, it's one of the biggest ones to process and also use it. And so it's been interesting to seeing how people's like economic interest or need for oil is also now influencing what alliances they might have with other countries. And I think Venezuela is also important to mention here, because they have been sanctioned by the US, but they also have a huge amount of oil that could kind of alter how geopolitical relations will be.
And Iran and Venezuela are both big exporters to China. So there is an argument to be made that this is this is part of a larger strategy to try to put pressure on China in the lead up to the grand showdown, if the US and China ever do come to blows. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt. The only real comparison is the oil crisis in the 1970s, which led to, you know, a whole, you basically can draw a line between the oil crisis in the 1970s to the neoliberalism era to, you know, everything that we're in now. So a second oil crisis at another time of high inflation is, you know, what are we going to get? Neo-neoliberalism 2.0. You know, it's not going to be good. That's for sure.
I think I've
in
also
on a high
been
note? You got a high note to end on?
No, I guess one is like maybe just also a reflection on even the how do I put it, just like the sinister thought that the US could even economically benefit from this move, given it's both the largest producer of crude oil. And so having these sanctions is actually making it more profitable for the US, and therefore there's going to be more demand. And that's also really hideous to consider, that there could be economic benefit to the US for this.
I mean, it's all, it's just the logic of capitalism, and imperialism is the highest stage of capitalism, as we all know. I just want to say it has been really gross and disgusting to see people like Albanese coming out and saying that they support the brave people of Iran in the first, you know, couple of days of a war that is absolutely going to be devastating to the people living in Iran. It is something else, really, that this is kind of part of the justification, is that they're somehow doing this for the people of Iran, as if blowing up a school full of girls is beneficial to anyone, as if unleashing more violence on the minorities in Iran is good. I mean, it's gross. It's really not good.
Yeah, and again, the language of peace has been so corrupted.
Yeah.
My high note is that I have a really banger song that is poignantly titled Empire of Dirt.
Hell yeah.
This one is by Egoless.
All right. We will see you next time.
With good news.
With good news.
Promise.
Coming with the good news app.